Good morning. How's everybody doing out there? This is Lucy
and Sharon,
and it's the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by
the Chemo Girls.
How you doing today, Sharon?
I'm doing great, Lucy.
Yeah.
It's a great day today, it's a busy day for us today.
Very busy. We have so many exciting people to talk to and question and get their perspectives today. And we have on the line one of my favorite people that she's one of my favorites. I just met her about 2 months ago at the National Women's Survivors Convention up in Nashville, Tennessee. But she became, I think, an immediate friend. She and her partner, Karen, that we'll be talking to a little bit later today. But we got Judy Pearson on the line. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, girls. I just love to listen to you guys talk. Oh, my God, your actions are so cute.
We get that all the time, and then we think, what in the world's that all about?
I know. It sounds great.
Oh, thank you so much. But I want to tell everybody a little bit about you. You are so acclaimed. I feel really honored to have you on the line today. And just reading your bio is just so heartwarming. But Judy is an award-winning writer. She's been writing all her life. I love this. It all started in an old maple tree in her parents' backyard. She would find a perfect branch. She'd get up and sit on it and just start spilling out her thoughts on paper. Now, hundreds of thousands of words later, Judy, she's a native of Michigan, is still writing. She's a graduate of Michigan State University and has spent 2 decades writing for newspapers, magazines, and she's published 3 of her own books. The first 2 are autobiographies about ordinary people who exhibited extraordinary courage. The first one is called Belly of the Beast. It's a POW's inspiring true story of faith, courage, and survival. And the second one is Wolves at the Door, the true story of America's greatest female spy. I didn't know about these books. I'm pumped to go out and get them and read these stories. The later is already being opted for a movie. That is phenomenal, Judy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is also the founder of Courage Concepts. It's an organization that cultivates courage in women and provides workshops and keynotes for corporations and organizations. So following a successful career in writing, Judy then started writing a third book. It's Just Hair, 20 Essential Life Lessons, and it is on a 2012 International Book Award finalist list. Not only is the book a product of her journey through breast cancer 2 years ago, and her survivorship connected her with Karen Shane, a 25-year-old ovarian cancer survivor. They recognize the unique needs of women survivors in the areas of education, motivation, and life application. And they, the two of these bold women, created the Women's Survivors Alliance. It's a support for women cancer survivors across the globe. So now Judy and her husband split their time between their sweet little hometown in the shores of Lake Michigan and downtown Chicago. And guess what? She still climbs trees. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. And I just have to make one correction.
The same one I was about to make, I think.
Karen is a 25-year survivor. But she's got
a few more
miles on her than 25 years old.
But she looks like she could be 25. You ladies are
absolutely
beautiful.
If she's 25, that makes me younger, so let's go.
You go, girl.
I'm going to have my mouth shut.
Well, we're really delighted to have you. And the purpose in this show is for you to share your cancer story with our listeners. The first question I had for you is, how would you and others describe yourself before your diagnosis?
I actually did this as an exercise for marketing materials at the advice of my publicist. I got together a list of 25, I guess, friends and family members and asked them to list five adjectives to describe me. And I, you know, it's kind of a scary exercise, but it's kind of fun. But one of the overwhelmingly familiar and same adjective that came back was humorous. So I guess I am humorous. I'm also fiercely loyal. And I grew up in a home with two basic mantras. One, you can do anything you put your mind to. And two, no matter how bad today is, tomorrow's a fresh canvas. You get to start all over again. So, and those descriptions of me came back from my friends as well. So I guess that would be how I would answer that question. I took those same tools when I went through cancer.
So you're kind of a humorous, diligent optimist. I like that.
That's right. That's right. In fact, we have to say, my ex-husband had difficulty looking at the glass half full. And one day, one night actually, he was complaining about life. And I said, well, you know, tomorrow is another day. And he said to me, do you really believe that? And I said, yeah. And he said, you're delusional. And shortly after that, I left him.
I don't blame you, honey. You got too much positive juices in there for that kind of nonsense.
That's stifling.
I thought that was pretty good.
So, Judy, will you tell us a little bit about how you were diagnosed?
My husband and I were watching television, actually, one night, and I scratched, like, right in my cleavage and felt this enormous, and I'm not kidding, enormous, lump on the inside of my left breast. It was so big that I looked down expecting it to be, you know, a piece of jewelry that'd fallen into my bra or something.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And the most astounding part was that I had had a clean mammogram about 60 days previously. So, then I said to my husband, oh my God, feel this. You know, how life goes. I had to go to New York on a speaking engagement. We were going on a cruise. I had this and that to do. So I put off going to the doctor for a few weeks. I had always had cysts, figured that's probably what it was.
Right.
When I did get to my doctor, she said, well, you know, let's watch it for another week or so. So time went by, and finally I did have a mammogram, an ultrasound, and they asked for a biopsy, and I was being very glib and very comical in the biopsy, and the surgeon who did the biopsy said to me in a very serious voice, listen to me, this is very serious, and you'll get your results in a few days, but I want you to know this is very serious. So on April 8th, 2011, we all remember where we were, right?
That's right.
I had not even been married to this wonderful man for a year yet. My son, who is a career Air Force intelligence agent, was preparing to go to Afghanistan for 6 months, and I got the call that I had breast cancer.
Wow.
Just took the wind right out of this very puffy sail.
Yes.
God, that is, and that's harsh. And, you know, I know that most people do remember that moment. I think that's very poignant that you mentioned that. That leads into our next question, because I can remember at the moment of diagnosis how I walked in with all these to-dos echoing in my head, and I'm checking my watch and blah, 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 and that was the norm for me. And then they said, you know, I hear the words, you have cancer, and all these sounds retreat to the back of my mind, and everything's echoing, and what people are saying to me is muffled, and my heart was immediately shifting all of my priorities. Like there was just this big, massive shift in me.
Yep.
How did you change at that moment of diagnosis?
Well, I am a list maker, and as it happened, the son who's in the Air Force and his family were living in England at the time. But at the moment of diagnosis, my daughter-in-law and grandchildren were visiting. So I was very fortunate to have her there with me. I shifted into making a to-do list. I, of course, didn't really know what the protocol was, so I just started making phone calls and called my own friends who had breast cancer and said, who did you see? Who did you see? Who did you see? And I put together a team of an oncologist, a breast surgeon, a plastic surgeon, and just started going through the list. And then the other thing that I really learned, along with the 19 lessons, the other 19 lessons that are in this book, but one of the things I learned in spades watching my daughter-in-law and my granddaughter, my grandson was too little, was that if I appeared strong, they could be strong. And then if they were strong, I could be strong. And it became sort of this wonderful, complete circle that we were all being strong for one another, and it made us strong. And I'm not going to lie about the fact that I wasn't terrified and, oh my God, I could die from this. But it was so helpful. If I was strong, they were strong, and we just kept going and holding hands through the whole thing.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. And you know that a lot of women don't, at that point of diagnosis, they don't quite have that grasp to be that strong themselves and face that upcoming treatment like you did in terms of writing your list and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, what Sharon and I really wanted to do with My Chemo Cocktail and Me was to provide that mentor organizational program for women. But I just commend you for being able to face that big C word like that and so proactive,
that
Judy.
That was your coping mechanism, wasn't it?
That's true. That's true. And I think, and that was part of the reason why Karen and I founded the Women Survivors Alliance and put on the convention. It was because in our own world, we looked around and we realized what we had, and I think you ladies did the same thing, what we had both within ourselves and with family and friends and resources, not monetary resources, but, you know, abilities and intelligence and the internet and all those things. And we realized we had all of that, but not everybody did.
Right.
And as women, and this is actually my current book project, one of the things we women do so well is reach out to one another and help one another and take our experiences and share with other women. We collaborate and network and nurture so well. That's what makes us the incredible creatures we are.
That's right.
So being able to take our strengths then and share them with others, I mean, that's why we're all doing what we're doing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
Exactly. And so, Judy, can you walk us through your cancer story just a little bit in terms of your treatment, how it changed your relationships, how it changed your priorities, all those little, you know, nuggets of helpful information?
You bet. So, again, I was a newlywed, and I just have to share that prior to the treatment actually beginning, I looked at my husband and said, look, this is not what you signed up for. I don't know if I'm going to live. I don't know what I'm going to look like. Run now. We'll get this thing annulled. You don't need to be saddled with me. Mm. And he, in his inimitable way, and you guys met him, he was at the convention, he said, this is what I signed up for. This is exactly what I signed up for.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where we're going to go, but we're going to take this journey together. And so I was extremely fortunate in that regard. The cancer center where I was treated, it was before we had bought our place in Chicago. So the cancer center where I was treated did a very thorough job of scanning me everywhere. I was diagnosed with triple-negative cancer, which is a very aggressive, rather rare cancer in itself, but it typically strikes young women, women of color, and women of Ashkenazi Jewish descent. And I am one of those. So they were very interested in studying me and my tumor, but they were also very concerned about seeing if it had spread, and since it had grown so quickly. And so I had, I think I counted, it's in my little book, how many hours I had spent in tubes being scanned. Mm-hmm. I had a what they call a simple mastectomy, so it was skin sparing, and basically, to be rather graphic, they just carved the breast matter out like a pumpkin, inserted a tissue expanders, and then we just sort of inflated that as we went. Then came the really tough part. That was very easy. The tough part was the 18 rounds of chemo that followed. That was really tough. And again, wow, because of my type of cancer and its speed of growth, they were very concerned to not knock it out of me. It had not spread. It was not in my lymph nodes. It was not in my chest wall. There were 3 tumors, however, in my breast, 2 others that I could not feel.
Wow.
And so the first 4 rounds of chemo were a cocktail that usually are given every 3 to 4 weeks. And my oncologist said, "You're healthy. We're going to get rid of this fast. We're going to do this every other week."
Which cocktail do you mind saying?
They call it ACT. So wow, it's, I can't remember the 3 chemicals because I've had so many other scientific words float through my mind.
I understand.
And I still have chemo brain, and I'm old.
Hey, I concur over here. I understand.
but it was pretty grueling. It really was. And we had sticky notes up in the bedroom so that I would wake up every day and see how many were left. And after every infusion, we'd take it down and put a new one up.
Good.
So the last 14 rounds, well, they weren't fun. They were far less taxing on my system.
Right.
And I have to say, you know, my son and I, I'm very close with all of my children. I have 2 sons and 3 stepchildren, and I adore them all. But the son who was in Afghanistan, who happens to be the eldest of all, we have some conversations via email and the telephone about fighting our respective enemies and battling and going to war. And, you know, the last, I was down to like 2 chemo infusions and called him crying saying, "I don't want to do anymore." And he said, "Then stop." And I said, "I can't." And he was like, "Well, then stop complaining."
That's good.
Because I'm a real big believer in finishing what you start, no matter how ugly it is.
That's right. And you know that, that person that you were before, you know, those attributes that you gave yourself for your publicist, that's what got you through it.
That's right.
That is, you were that woman to fight, and you were that woman to see it to the end.
But cancer, a cancer diagnosis truly is a line in the sand of your life. There's
the
you before cancer and the you after cancer. And you are forever changed. Cured, no evidence of disease, you know, parts cut off, however you want to describe it. You will never be the same person again. But that doesn't mean that it's not, that you can't be somebody else who's as good or better.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a big thing that people need to understand and learn.
Well, and I know I've equated it to feeling like, you know, I was being pushed from every angle and heated, and it was just like, you know, I felt like I was taking more than I could bear. At times, not all the time, but at times I did. And and you go further, you do more, you bear more than you ever thought you could, not because you walked in able to do it, you just had no other choice. But by the time you get to the other side, what it's given you is an internal beauty that you could never have achieved any other way, a transparency and a way of allowing other people to look into your experience and learn from it. And I really equate it to walking in as this insecure lump of coal and walking out as an humble diamond. You know, I mean, definitely humbled, but feeling strong, more confident, much more transparent. And I think it can do that, you know.
I think you're absolutely right.
So, okay, well, you talked about chemo brain. You know, that's always something I truly believe. I'm 11 years out, and I know that I still suffer with that. And something that I wanted you to possibly share is, what is the most helpful thing that anyone did for you while you were going through that?
This is kind of funny because, we live in this wonderful little town called South Haven. It, as it happens, is my home as well. So not only have I met a lot of friends when I moved back, friends who were not originally from South Haven, but a lot of high school classmates who stayed. And quite honestly, people would call and want to come and visit, and, you know, it kind of depended on the day. But it was such fun having people drop food by, because I wasn't hungry. Uh-huh. I didn't want to eat. I really, all I wanted was grapefruit, amazingly. And I ate gobs of that Costco grapefruit, you know, wow, little things. I don't know why, but it was good. But I was worried about my husband. You know, our children are grown and out of the house, but, you know, the poor guy had to eat. I didn't want him going out all the time. And left to his own devices, he would eat Spam and Kraft macaroni and cheese. So, and he knows I will say that about him. So many of my friends, particularly those who I grew up with, whose mothers and fathers are still living, they would bring food over for David. And that's such a small town thing,
yeah,
I think. But it certainly can work in a big city, too. And there's just something wonderful about knowing that someone has taken time to prepare something for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I got cards from friends across the country. That was wonderful. But the food that the locals brought was so much fun. It really was. And a lot of them I got the recipes for because David really liked them, yeah, and I made them still.
You just have to be in that back room when the taco casserole comes through the door with all the aromas, right?
Yep, exactly. And periodically I'd go into the den closet to make sure he wasn't loading up on more Spam and mac and cheese. And if I saw that the stash was getting bigger, then I'd call my friends and say, quick, bring more food.
Bring something with nutritional value for my husband.
He's clogging up his arteries again. Well, one more little question.
When the apocalypse comes, everyone come to my house. I've got Spam for everybody.
That's great. Well, one other little question, Judy, about your journey, your cancer story is, what would be your number one helpful trick of the trade for a newbie? One of those little golden nuggets of wisdom to know real early on?
I think that, and actually I shared this with my mother, who died of a non-cancer lung disease at the age of 66, mm-hmm, and my beautiful stepmother, who died of her third unrelated cancer, mm-hmm, about 10 years after that. And that is, don't try to solve it all in one day.
Yeah.
You can't possibly wrap your arms around everything in one day. And so there was this saying that I found from my mom you can even eat an elephant a bite at a time.
Yeah.
And then for fun, I figured it out. You really can. You know, if you ate an elephant steak every night for 20 years, at the end of the 20 years, you'd have nothing left but tusks and toenails and a tail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's really the biggest thing. You can't possibly get everything done in one day, and you can't process everything that's going to come down the road. So don't try.
Uh-huh.
Take one little piece. Just work on today. Tomorrow you can work something else. If you're a list maker, make a list of the other stuff you got to work on. If
right.
you're not a list maker, don't press yourself to do that. But please just take one little step at a time. And I'm sure that's, you know, a big part of the materials that are in your backpacks. That's the reason for that.
It is. It is. And speaking of that, you know, you're talking about a trick of the trade for the newbie, but something that this whole process leaves us with in the end, a lot of the time, is a desire to pay forward. And I yep. know that you have done that in a big, big way. You have obviously, you know, written the book, but also you've come together with another survivor, Miss Karen. Would you like to tell us very briefly about the convention, because we will be doing a joint show for our listeners. I'll tell you now, keep looking, because there's a whole show on this topic, but she'll give you just the little teaser on the convention.
Well, the idea of the convention is truly Karen's brainchild, but it evolved from her original concept 5 years ago, which was going to be a celebration for Nashville cancer survivors in a park, to more than that. It became what cancer survivors particularly women really need, again, is the networking, is the sense of I'm not alone in this. And we put together a program, a 2.5-day program, that provided education and motivation and life application to cancer, all cancer survivors, all cancers, all ages, all stages. We wanted to share with them nutrition and exercise and how you just get through the day-to-day stuff and a little bit of glam and a lot of laughter. And it far exceeded our expectations. We had 846 people. That's crazy.
It was
That's
amazing. It was amazing.
So when we said we weren't going to start planning 2014 for months, oh my gosh, we were writing lists the night the first one ended. We're so excited for this next convention, which is July 31st through August 10th, again in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, it was a phenomenal 2.5 days. Sharon and I were there. We had our booth, but not only that, we were able just to meet and network with such wonderful people that are out there dedicating their lives to helping other people, face this terrible diagnosis, but face it with courage and strength and know that there's a purpose for the future. So we're all there together in our own little ways, helping that next person, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, Judy, thank you so much for being with us today. It's so great to hear your beautiful voice again. And we just look forward to next July. Everybody put that on your calendar. Judy, tell everybody where they can find you on the internet. What's the website?
We encourage everybody to come take a look at our digital magazine at theplum.org. And the convention website is survivorconvention.com.
Okay, great.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Judy.
Thank you guys so much. Keep doing what you're doing. You're making a difference, a huge difference in so many lives.
Thank you for your encouragement and your part in this. So we will be talking to you extremely soon.
Yes.
Okay,
all right.
Bye.
So until later, everyone. This is Sharon and Lucy signing off. We're not just surviving, but we're thriving with you. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.